Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, March 16th. Good morning, everyone. I wish I could say good morning individually to every one of you listening right now, because we all need each other that much. And a special good morning to everyone who doesn't usually listen at this time of day, now home because your kid's school just got canceled, or you're now working from home, or suddenly out of work, I know. So good morning, as here we all are trying to get through the coronavirus crisis together, through the health crisis, through the economic crisis for many families that is coming as a result, if not already here, and through the anxiety that is gripping so many people, not knowing what might be around the corner. It is definitely an anxiety crisis in addition to everything else, right? And it's probably best for everyone who is experiencing anxiety to just say that out loud. And just that can be settling. And to remember that most of us and most of our loved ones are going to be fine. But the Russian roulette aspect of this, the randomness, is very real. So let's look it in the eye and move on together. And we're in this extreme paradox right now. Another thing I guess we need to say out loud. We're in this extreme paradox right now of the need to support each other and isolate from each other at the same time. We'll keep doing our best from our end to provide information and community to both of those contradictory ends, support each other and isolate from each other. Let's figure it out. One program note on the isolation side, as with many companies, WNYC is having as many people as possible work from home. And as of today, that includes me. I've never done this before. Wayne Schulmeister from our amazing engineering staff has spent hours setting this up. Thank you, Wayne and team. So hopefully this sounds normal and will work. Our first guest today is Brooklyn and Queens Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, House Judiciary Committee member and a top deputy to Nancy Pelosi in the context of the impeachment. Now, suddenly, he's on in a very different role, and how suddenly we're all concerned about something completely opposite from anything we were concerned about just a little while ago. Congressman, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yay, we did it. Congressman, how are you holding up?
We're holding up, and, you know, this is a difficult time for all of us in New York City and throughout the country, but, you know, I still believe we are a resilient country, and we can all rise to the occasion. There are a lot of uncertainties connected to the coronavirus, but there are also a lot of things that we can all do to ensure that we bend and hopefully flatten the curve in terms of increased infections. And so that should be empowering for all of us, even in these uncertain times, that we can all take steps to make a difference.
I think right now, a lot of what everyone is trying to do is about two main questions. One, how much can we lock down society for maximum isolation, especially to protect the elderly? And two, how can we get our healthcare system ready for the wave of emergencies to come that are beyond the current capacity? Is Congress addressing either of those things, or are those more for other agencies?
Well, we have begun to address certainly the healthcare architecture and infrastructure from the standpoint of financing. In the first bill that we passed, which included the $8.3 billion in emergency relief, a significant amount of that funding will go to our public health professionals, our state and local governments, who are going to be at the front lines of confronting the coronavirus. Now, there's more that, of course, needs to be done. In the most recent package that was passed late at night this past Friday into Saturday morning, and the Senate, we expect, will take it up today, we increased the federal government share of Medicaid from 50% to 58%. And so that will mean billions of additional dollars to our state and local governments in terms of making sure that we can provide health care to people, particularly the most vulnerable amongst us.
So Congressman, Joe Biden in the debate last night proposed calling out the military to build expanded hospital or patient capacity in temporary facilities fast. Governor Cuomo, too, something similar in an op-ed. Do you like that idea, and is it something that Congress could help facilitate, or are you dependent on the president for that?
Well, in this regard, we are largely dependent on the president as commander-in-chief. He's got discretion, particularly related to the emergency declaration, to begin to reallocate resources in that regard. It certainly is something that he needs to consider. In China, in order for them to get a hold on the spread of the virus and accommodate all of the sick people who were coming in, they were able to stand up medical facilities swiftly. We certainly are going to need to do that as well. That's one of the reasons why social distancing is so important, because it will give us the space to build up the public health architecture and infrastructure necessary, particularly in terms of ICU beds. And being able to deal with people who are coming in severe respiratory distress. And so I think the Army Corps of Engineers, which I believe is the Governor Cuomo's suggestion, as well as the military generally, does have the expertise in wartime to be able to stand up facilities in a comprehensive way and in an expeditious way. And, this is not a war in the traditional sense, but we are fighting a war against the coronavirus and trying to mitigate its spread. And so there seems to be an important role for the military to play.
Bernie Sanders in the debate called for a federal guarantee that every American affected in terms of health care costs or lost wages be made whole by the federal government. The bill the House passed doesn't go nearly that far. Why not? And how far does it go?
Unfortunately, some of our Republican colleagues in the administration made clear that they were not prepared to go the entire way as it relates to a universal paid sick leave policy. But we were able to cover, we believe, approximately 33.6 million people who don't have any short-term or sick leave as it relates to the virus outbreak. We need to move in an additional direction. We also need to make sure that corporate America continues to step up. Many large companies do have sick leave policies that could be helpful, and others, including even Walmart, I believe, McDonald's, Apple, Uber, Lyft, the Darden restaurants, which I think includes Olive Gardens, have stepped up. This is going to require all hands on deck. The government can do a lot. The government can't do everything. But it is clear to me that we are going to have to approach this with a family-first orientation, with a displaced worker orientation, with a vulnerable senior orientation, and not a, sort of millionaire, billionaire, multinational corporation bailout-type orientation. For me, that's a non-starter. And we're going to have a conference call later on today, led by Speaker Pelosi, with all of the members of the House Democratic Caucus that are able to participate, to begin to discuss the next steps that we have to take in order to make sure that the most vulnerable amongst us can survive economically because of the shock to the system that we know we're going to experience over the next few weeks.
All right. You're ready to hear a contrarian? Let's see if we can put on Cassius in Brooklyn. I think I can even put phone calls on the air from home. Click. Cassius, are you there? All right. I have a feeling that the air can hear me and the listeners on the air, can hear me and can hear Cassius, but Cassius can't hear me. So I'm going to try to read the notes from his question that the screener took, Congressman. He says, it's an insane overreaction to close bars and restaurants. SARS was deadly, and we didn't go this far. What's your response?
It's not an overreaction. When you look at the projections that come out of places like China and South Korea and Italy, and it's better to be as comprehensive as possible to minimize the spread, because when you're dealing with but it is now a pandemic. There are two issues to consider. There's transmissibility, and then there's mortality. And with respect to COVID-19, the coronavirus, we know that the transmissibility is significant. If you compare it to, for instance, Zika and Ebola, Ebola was only transmitted via bodily fluids. It was lethal if you got it, but could only be transmitted through bodily fluids. If you look at Zika, for instance, very troublesome if you got it, but it could only be transmitted through mosquito bites. Whereas COVID-19 can be transmitted through airborne droplets, through basic human contact, hugs, kisses, handshakes even. It could be transmitted through touching a surface that a COVID-infected individual previously touched, and we're not sure how long it can live on the surface. Because the transmissibility is so significant in terms of the ease of the virus going from one person to the next, taking these dramatic steps in terms of social distancing will definitely save lives and help give us the time to stand up our healthcare infrastructure.
Let's talk about the bill that the House Democrats and President Trump did come to an agreement on. It's an emergency bill that includes free coronavirus testing, paid sick leave, and extended unemployment insurance. The Senate could approve it today, though I'm also hearing maybe not, that there may be some Republican opposition to this, even though the president is on board with you. What can you tell us about the status of that?
Well, it's my understanding that Mitch McConnell had indicated to Speaker Pelosi that if the Speaker was able to reach agreement with Secretary Mnuchin and the President endorsed the agreement, that the Senate would move. Now, there's always dynamics in the Senate. There's a saying on Capitol Hill, 99 is not enough because of the Senate rules, that often you need 100 people to at least agree to move a bill forward in order to get something signed into law. That's a whole different structural issue that we're going to have to deal with moving forward, because the Senate has, of course, stopped multiple bills that have already come out of the Democratic House. This should be different this time because this is an emergency. This is a pandemic. And we obviously understood that there was a need to move in a bipartisan way in order to get relief to the American people. We wanted to make sure that testing would be free for every single American. Everybody means everybody. And we didn't want people to resist having to get tested because of financial hardship or to be hit with surprise billing afterward that could add to the devastating economic consequences of what we're all going through. That was critical. We wanted to expand access to unemployment benefits, which we were able to do in this particular bill, because we know that there will be a lot of displaced workers, particularly as you see cities like New York moving to close down bars and restaurants and movie theaters and theater venues and things of that nature. We also wanted to expand the eligibility for school lunches, free and reduced price breakfasts, things of that nature, as well as the Women's Infant and Children Program, and to make sure that people could get access to SNAP benefits, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, because of what we knew was coming. Now, we're still going to have to do more, but it's important for the Senate to act and act today so we can get the bill to the president's desk and begin to work on a third relief package as the as the stress of this all continues to hit our health and our economic system.
How quickly would any of this aid be available to people? I'm sure folks who are newly out of work right now in the theater business and the restaurant business, so many places, want to know, how can I get this unemployment insurance, this extended unemployment insurance? I guess they wouldn't need the extended version yet, or the paid sick leave if that's in this bill. How can people take advantage of it?
Yeah, it's a very important question. And from the standpoint of the unemployment insurance, as you know, the program is supported in large measure by the federal government, but administered by each state. And each state has a different level of benefits. New York State tends to be amongst the more generous. And so we'd have to direct your callers to New York State in that regard, as it relates to the unemployment benefits. In terms of the paid sick leave, which will apply to people who work for small and medium-sized companies with 500 or less employees. The way that the program was structured was that one could be eligible for up to 2 weeks of paid sick leave and would receive their regular paycheck, and then the company would then be able to get a tax credit in the equivalent amount. Because we wanted to make this as seamless as possible as it relates to being free from unnecessary bureaucracy and paperwork. So those who may be eligible for paid sick leave because of the circumstances of taking ill or having a child that is ill or a child that is out of school, and therefore they need to be able to stay at home and care for that child, we believe that those parents as well would be eligible. They should be paid by their employer consistent with their regular cycle, and then the employer gets reimbursed in the form of a tax credit that the employer will file with the federal government.
You know, two members of the New York State Legislature from Brooklyn, Weinstein and Barron, tested positive. Separately, the New York City Council has canceled all meetings for now. What's the status of Congress in that respect?
In terms of Congress, we were previously scheduled to be on what we refer to as a district work period, to be at home in our district this week on the House side while the Senate is in session. That's why it was important for the House to be able to act and then to spread back out throughout the country and help to coordinate the local response and disseminate information. Now, we are scheduled to go back into session next week, but honestly, it's a day-to-day decision. It remains to be seen. You've got the NIH now recommending that gatherings of 50 people or more not take place. Obviously, with respect to Congress, if the business of the people needs to be done, we're going to need to be there. Now, the Capitol and the Capitol office buildings have all been closed to the public for the time being. Most of our staffs, including my own, are working from home, and the House has prepared to make sure that everybody is equipped to be able to do that. And we'll just take it day by day, week by week. But when legislation needs to move, we will be in the Capitol doing our job. We should be the last people to jump off the ship.
I think that's good to hear. Here's a question from a caller. Does the congressman have thoughts on how Trump might become more irrational as the crisis grows and spreads and take unconstitutional moves to try to secure his power? So that's the question. Are you concerned about that?
Well, I think there's always reason to be concerned with the erratic behavior of this particular president, particularly in a crisis. He doesn't handle normalcy well, and we should all be reasonably concerned with how he could handle this crisis. He certainly hasn't done well up to this date. But we need the president to be successful or to get out of the way, one or the other. And we're certainly going to do all that we can to work with this administration to be able to provide the relief necessary to the American people to make it through. But fundamentally, I believe in the resiliency of the American people. We've worked our way through things that were a lot tougher than this. We worked our way through the Civil War, where the country was at risk of tearing itself apart, and we made it to the other side. We worked our way through the Great Depression, when the stock market collapse plunged us into tremendous economic uncertainty. We worked our way through World War II, where we had to confront, you know, the evil empire of Nazi Germany. And an evil that had previously been unseen in many ways in the history of the world in terms of the magnitude of the German war machine, the inherent contradictions of the Jim Crow South that we confronted and worked our way through in terms of the civil rights movement, and of course here in New York City in 9/11 when we all came together. This is going to require all of us to come together. Yes, presidential leadership will be important, and yes, we will continue to monitor this administration to ensure that we're not seeing unconstitutional overreach by this president, and we're watching him closely. But the American people are going to have to pull together in order for us to work our way through.
By the way, just to remind everyone that not everything has changed. I guess this counts as comic relief in this context, though it probably wouldn't in any other context. Trump seems to be using the cover of this moment of intense focus on coronavirus to get ready to pardon Michael Flynn, his former national security advisor, of course, convicted in the Mueller investigation of lying to the FBI about his contacts with Russia. He tweeted that he's seriously considering that, which might be setting us up for doing it while, you know, we're all hyper-focused on health and safety and the economic crisis. What's your reaction?
Well, truth crust to the ground will rise again. And, you know, notwithstanding the unconscionable, un-American, unconstitutional acts that this president has engaged in that was at the heart of the Trump-Ukraine scandal, you know, it's my view that when we get through this moment, that the the full scope of incompetence and corruption of this president and his administration will be laid bare before the American people. Certainly the House Democratic majority will do its job in making sure that takes place, and that the American people ultimately are going to have to make a decision in November of 2020 as to what kind of country we are and what kind of country we want to be moving forward. And I'm confident that they will make the right decision at that point.
Two things. One is from a doctor writing in on this idea of mobilizing the Army Reserves to build auxiliary hospital facilities really quick. This doctor says, mobilizing Army Reserves will pull nurses and doctors from their civilian jobs, will expand beds, but those beds need to be manned with staff. So that's the first I've heard of that. I don't know if an exception would be need to be made or if the Army Reserve has the flexibility to do that easily, to exempt medical professionals who are needed on the front lines from that Army Reserve mobilization if that comes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that is a very important point that was raised and something that that the Army would have the capacity to do, as I understand it, in the context of a national emergency. And what you have, since many individuals across the country are being asked to socially distance, stand down, work from home, you know, if you've got people who are non-essential individuals, healthcare workers, transportation workers who may be part of the Army Reserve or the National Guard, or whatever the case may be, certainly standing up additional hospital capacity would fall into the category of a top priority. And that is certainly something, exemptions from work that could be accommodated.
And last thing, as kind of a transition to our debate segment, some primaries have been postponed. I don't know if many listeners heard this news over the weekend, but Louisiana postponing its primary to June, I believe, and Georgia until May. I think I have those reversed from, or I may have those reversed from their scheduled dates. Is your party going to have more trouble nominating a president if people are afraid to go to the polls and vote?
You know, we'll have to see how things go tomorrow. The governors, you know, of those respective states, including Ohio and Florida and Illinois, have decided to proceed. It's my understanding that a lot of the votes that have come in via the mail. And certainly in New York, what I anticipate is that the governor may consider our late April primary being deferred, perhaps to align it with the June primaries that are already scheduled to be on the books for the congressional races and the state
races. Oh, that's news to me. Is this new? I can't see every detail go by. There are so many. But is this just being announced that the governor is considering postponing the April 28th primary?
No, I'm not saying that. I haven't spoken to him about this particular issue. What I'm suggesting is that based on his decision that was just made to postpone the Queensborough president special election, which was scheduled to be next Tuesday, that it presumably
now?
is something that the governor will think about at the appropriate time.
Got it. And to be clear, listeners, Louisiana and Georgia don't go tomorrow. Apparently the four states that go tomorrow, important states, big states, Florida, Ohio, Illinois, Arizona, apparently will hold their primaries as far as we know as of now. Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat from Brooklyn and Queens, we always appreciate you coming on with us, and especially at a time like this. Thank you very much. Let's keep talking.
Thank you very much. much, Brian. We will.
And listeners, we want to invite you in on the conversation, too. If you've got a question about a national news item, whether it's something you want to know about the election or the Trump administration or anything else you think might fall under the national politics umbrella, give us a call and leave us a message with your name, where you're calling from, and your question. We'll collect those and keep them in our pocket for when I'm speaking with someone who can give you a good answer. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255, 844-745-TALK. See you tomorrow.